In April this year, the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists got the biggest ever leak of information on people using tax havens. The ICIJ published the first of a series of reports revealing the secret financial records of tens of thousands of people in more than 170 countries linked to offshore companies and trusts. It was one of the biggest multi-country investigations in history, and it all began in 2011. That was when the then Fairfax investigative journalist Gerard Ryle received a mysterious package in the post, a hard drive containing 2.5 million digital files. He's in Australia at the moment to talk about the leak and what's happened since. I asked him about the countries where the activity was most concentrated.
There's no doubt that the countries that are most benefiting from the tax haven system is Britain, America, and France. The company, the money itself, doesn't go to some Caribbean island. It actually stays in a Swiss bank account or a British bank account or an American bank account. That's where the money stays. It's only on paper that it moves offshore.
So you say that countries like Britain and America are benefiting from it. Are they overall, are the people of those countries benefiting from it? In other words, does the money that the City of London sucks in compensate for the tax that isn't being paid?
It's a difficult question because we don't really know how much money is out there in the offshore system. But there is a very real pattern that you can see when you start looking at this whole issue, in that every tin pot dictator from Africa is parking their money in London or in America or in Switzerland. So therefore, there is real capital flow going into the first world countries. If they really wanted to shut it down, they could, but there's no real financial incentive for them to do so.
So how do they do that? Can you, without getting too technical, explain a bit about how, if you are a tin pot dictator, you manage this system?
Well, it's actually quite simple. What you would do, for instance, is set up a company in the British Virgin Islands. You make sure that that company has got a Swiss bank account attached to it. And so there, hey presto, on one move, that account is not linked back to you. So therefore, you can start moving money through those accounts and it'll never come back to you.
Can you do that with unlimited amounts? Do you have to split it up into lots of different accounts and have it in different places? Or can you just do that as simply as that?
You can do it as simply as that, or you can buy more secrecy. And the more money you spend on the secrecy, the more complex the systems become. I've given you a very simple scenario, but if you wanted to spend more money, you could have a Panamanian entity linked to that bank account too, or you know, you could have any number, or you could route it through four or five different tax havens to really make sure that no one can come after you.
Now, we've talked a bit about individuals. What about big institutional companies? What about companies like Google and Amazon and Apple? How do they do it?
Well, they're doing it. It's very important for me to explain at one point, this is all legal. What everyone is doing is legal. There's no, unless you can see that they're avoiding tax by looking at what they declare to their various government departments, you can't accuse them of tax haven. What big companies are doing is called transfer pricing. So what they're doing is making sure that the profits that they're making in one country end up in another. And how you do that is very simple. You set up a company in, say, Luxembourg, and you make sure that the rights to the formula or whatever it is you're selling are owned by that entity in Luxembourg. And so if you make $300 million in profit, for instance, in Australia, you make sure that the Luxembourg entity charges $300 million in Luxembourg for the rights to whatever it is you have. And then you transfer, literally, the profits to Luxembourg.
You used the word rights. So essentially you're trading in an intangible.
What you have are big corporations striking deals with governments, like the governments of Ireland, the governments of Luxembourg, other entities. And they do this. They come to an arrangement that if I have a company in your country, you will only charge me X percent of tax, which is always lower than the company or where the company is actually doing its real business.
But if you are an international chain of coffee shops, for instance, you can go to the Australian Tax Office and say to them, the intellectual property in our brand is such that we have to charge for the rights this amount. And if the ATO accepts that, then you can just basically funnel a lot of money out of the country, quite legally, as you say.
Perfectly legally, yes. That's a very simple scenario, and that's what happens with big corporations.
So are retailers who are demanding that there should be tax paid on things that are bought on Amazon and other goods that are brought into the country. Do they have a real point?
Again, I don't speculate about whether rights or wrongs of any of this, but this is a system, and this is a system that is operating now. It's almost like a parallel universe. You have the very simple universe that you and I live in. We pay taxes. We can't escape those taxes. If you've got enough money and if you've got clever enough accountants, you can set up very complex structures that will minimize your tax perfectly legally.
Is there anything that an individual, a single government can do about this?
I think if the governments came together, I mean, what David Cameron was actually preaching at the G8 and the G20 was that they all need to come together and come to a consensus on this to stop it happening. He was knocked back. He's now gone and tried to do it in Britain. But without that collaboration around the world, he really is wasting his time.
But he's British, and Britain is a member of the European Union, and Luxembourg, a country which, and Ireland, both countries which you've mentioned in this context, are members of the European Union.
Correct.
If you can't fix it within an organisation like the EU, how are you going to get an international agreement?
Because you'd need to have the Americans on board and you need to have all the other countries on board for it to work, because they'd be worried about losing too much revenue inside the EU if it was just an EU thing.
So the chances are Buckley's or none.
Well, it needs to be an international movement against this. Look, it's clearly creating inequity around the world and it's, you know, creating problems, but you know, there are a lot of vested interests in keeping it all going.
The director of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, Gerard Ryle.